Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest tonight grew up in Cleveland, Ohio, and earned an MBA from Ohio State University. He went to work for PNC Bank in 1972, and today is its chairman and CEO. PNC Bank is the sixth largest bank in America, and it recently committed $100 million to improve early childhood education. $2.1 million of this is committed to the Detroit Public Schools for a pre-K school program. His name, Jim Rohr, and I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
Now back to Anything Is Possible with Jack Krasula on News Talk 760 WJR.
We're with Jim Rohr, the chairman and CEO of PNC Financial Services Group, PNC Bank. Jim, welcome. It's an honor to have you.
Jack, it's great to be on your show, and thank you so much for the invite.
Can we start by talking about your childhood and your mom and your dad?
Well, that was a long time ago, Jack. I'll soon be 62, but yeah, I grew up in Cleveland. My father had a restaurant, which was a wonderful place. It was a fish house in downtown Cleveland, and they were wonderful people. And my father passed away when I was 10, and my mother, you know, so held the family together, which was terrific. And finished school and went on just like you said to Notre Dame and Ohio State, and for the last 38 years I've been here at PNC.
What's the biggest thing, Jim, you learned from your mom, and what's the biggest thing you learned from Dad?
Well, you know, my father passed away when I was 10, and I guess a few things. One, he was a big-time Notre Dame fellow and very religious, Catholic, of course. And he worked very hard at the restaurant. And I would think that, you know, the values that he taught me and you know, the way he worked hard in that restaurant, I think were probably the things that I remember most that he, you know, that he taught me, because he worked a lot. He worked many hours. And he had a lot of great friends. He had a lot of great friends. He treated other people very, very well. And I would say my mother was, you know, she was obviously the, given that he wasn't home most of the time and that he passed away when I was so young, I would say that, you know, she was the person that really embedded the values in me that I, you know, I guess in hindsight I have now. I can't credit or blame anybody else. And she was a very, very good, kind person, and looked out for me when, you know, up until about 10 years ago when she passed away. So she was a great single parent for most of my life, and was, you know, basically was my advisor and counsel and confidant for my growing up years.
You went to St. Ignatius in Cleveland for high school, and to this day, you love that school.
Oh, I do.
What made it so special?
Well, thinking back, my one brother went to Cathedral Latin, my other brother went to Gilmore, and so I didn't want to go to either one of those places. And just because they did. So I wanted to go someplace different, and Ignatius has a history of being an excellent, you know, educational institution, with kids from all over the city and all over the region go to Ignatius. And, you know, for those, and they had, you know, obviously great sports teams in those days too. And it was a challenge to get in. So I applied to get in and was fortunate enough to get in. And, I got a great education there, a lot of discipline from the Jesuits. As they're famous for, or at least were then, and the most important thing, I think, I met kids, young fellas from all walks of life, and there were rich people, poor people, all kinds of people at Ignatius, and I think that was part of my education at Ignatius that I didn't realize until I looked back later, I got to meet kids from every neighborhood in the region, and that was, I think that helped me in the long run.
You got your undergraduate from Notre Dame, and there's a saying that you don't graduate from Notre Dame, you become Notre Dame. What makes, you either love that school or hate that school, what's so special about Notre Dame?
Well, as you and I talk, Jack, there's no reason to hate Notre Dame, but it's a wonderful institution. My father went there and graduated in the 30s, and he was a big-time Notre Dame fan, and so Notre Dame was very part of, very big part of my home growing up. He went to Notre Dame games on both ends of the coast for over 25 years, riding the train. Matter of fact, he was at the Notre Dame-Nebraska game on the day I was born. There'd be some people who might question that dedication. But anyway, Notre Dame was a very big part of our home. Both my brothers had gone there. And by that time, I wanted to follow in their footsteps. And so it was a great university. And it's, again, the values of Notre Dame just in many ways can't be questioned. And the education you get there is terrific, too. And while I was there, we had great football teams, so that was fun, too. So it was an all-around win.
38 years ago, you joined PNC. What's the first job Jim Rohr ever had at PNC?
Oh, it was a long time. 1972. These two guys showed up, fellas, I should say, from Pittsburgh National Bank at Ohio State and interviewed me. And, Ohio State had given me this wonderful deal that they'd pay me $300 a month and a free tuition if I would teach statistics. And I didn't have any money, so that sounded good to me. It sounded great to me, and I was just married. And so I did that. These fellows from Pittsburgh National Bank interviewed me and asked me back to Pittsburgh, and I met a group of people that I liked and went to work for Pittsburgh National Bank, which was a very small bank at the time. Very small bank, and I was a trainee at the bank. Back in those days, we had the Vietnam War, and people didn't like corporations much, so most corporations had training programs where you went around and saw all the various parts of the bank. So I spent some time in the trust department, spent some time in the branches, spent a little time down in the operations buildings. So I got a very, very good background on what banking was all about. I think that served me well, too.
We're talking to Jim Rohr of PNC Bank, and I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Once again, here's your host, Jack Krasula.
We're with Jim Rohr, and in 2007, he was honored by American Bankers Association with its Banker of the Year Award. Speaking of banking, talk to us about banking today as a career for a young person, Jim Rohr.
Oh, I think banking today is a great place for a young person to start a career. You start with the fact that banking is a fundamental business in our economy. It's the largest business in the economy. The economy can't grow unless you have a solid financial system, and so that's just a given. And secondly, we've gone through this financial crisis, and I think that's pretty much over now and behind us. And what people miss the most is that banking is changing so much. Never mind the regulatory piece or the subprime that's gotten so much notoriety, but people are doing business so differently today, and the industry is changing. For example, check writing is going to be down somewhere between 10% and 15% this year. Online banking for us is up 20%. And so the way people do business with the way people use their banks is changing dramatically. We've got a new account called Virtual Wallet. That's an online account. We're opening up 4,000 new accounts a week, and 80% of them are all new customers. And it has an online savings feature, bill pay feature. It also budgets your money and has a calendar that you can run your life off of. And if you have a payment date coming up where you don't have enough money, it notifies you on your cell phone that you have a danger day coming up. I mean, there's so much change taking place in the banking business. And if you're a young person today coming out of school, any industry you want to go into an industry that's changing. Now, buggy whip industry is going to go away. Banking is not going to go away. Money's not going to go away. So what you want to do is you want to get involved in an industry that's changing and evolving and developing. And where there's change, there's opportunity. And for a young person, I think banking is a very exciting place because it's changing so much.
Jim Roy, what's the biggest thing you've learned about banking in these past 38 years?
Well, like any other industry, Jack, I don't know, it's hard to say, but success is all tied to the people around you. And I think that's the thing that really creates the success of an institution is the high-quality people you have around you and that you work together as a team. Joe Theismann said something to me one time. He came and made a speech, and he was very good. But, you know, if you come away with one tidbit from a speech, you know, you probably did okay. And Joe stood up and he said, "It's the most important thing is the winning team is the team that has the best 11-person team on the field, not necessarily the best 11 players." And I've thought about that for a long time, and I think that's been true at PNC. When we have people working together as a team, we can accomplish a lot. When, no matter how bright somebody is, if they're pulling the other direction, you know, the organization doesn't do as well. And I think that's a tidbit that's been valuable to me for a long time.
Let's go back to October of 2008. And you buy Nat City for $5.6 billion. So 2 years later, how has that acquisition gone?
Well, it's gone very, very well. I mean, National City had entered into some transactions and bought a few banks, paid too much, and bought a brokered equity portfolio, home equity portfolio, 38% from California, 26% in Florida, that really hurt them. And their core business was terrific. But they went outside, and it's a mistake a lot of people make. They went outside their core strategy and core capabilities, went to some places and portfolios where they didn't manage the risk, and it really hurt the bank. Now, we always wanted to merge with National City. We tried to do that back in the 80s, actually, because the geography made sense. And the values of the people, the Midwestern values of the people, were very similar to that of PNC. But for one reason or another, we just simply couldn't get it done. They run into problems. Fortunately, we were able to acquire them for $5 billion, and we were able, in the acquisition, we had enough combined capital to write down their troubled assets and to get those problems behind us and then merge the core bank with our core bank, and it's worked out extraordinarily well, extraordinarily well.
There's two schools of thought, Jim Roy. One school says this TARP bailout saved the country, and then others say this was awful. Talk to us about the TARP money that the federal government gave.
You know, Jack, it's a very interesting thing. It's evolved. People forget. And I just had lunch, and I had dinner last night and lunch today with Ben Bernanke. As a matter of fact, we were talking about this exact thing. People forget that when TARP money was conceived and implemented, we had a confidence crisis in the United States, and mostly it impacted liquidity in the markets, in the capital markets, and the capital markets collapsed, as we know. The TARP money was given to only the strong banks. People forget that. It was only given to what was perceived as the strong banks. And the impact was to enhance their capital levels so that the capital markets would have more confidence in them and liquidity would return to the markets. National City, as you know, didn't get TARP money. They were not perceived as a strong bank, and we were able to take them over. But the other banks were perceived as strong banks. The evolution took place so that it was, you know, the political forces showed up and said it was bailout money. So now it's called bailout. TARP money is now, you know, bailout money. If you look at the money, what's happened with the banks, the vast majority and virtually all the large banks have paid all the money back. They've paid the 5% dividend. and the warrant have been redeemed very, very profitably. This has been a very profitable investment. It was an investment by the Fed into the banks, and it's been extraordinarily profitable for the Fed. Now, later, it was called bailout money, and the administration decided to use some of that money for automobiles and non-banks. I'm not sure they're going to get all that money back, but it even looks like AIG is going to probably pay back all of the money they had. So, but the banking industry, for which it was originally conceived, it's been a very, very profitable activity for the Fed.
PNC Bank in Michigan is a $15 billion operation. Up until recently, it was run by Dave Boyle. Now Rick DeVore has come in. Mm-hmm. You've lent hundreds of millions in Michigan. How is the Michigan PNC doing?
The Michigan PNC, knock on wood, is doing just fine. And, Dave Boyle is a great guy. We have him back here doing a number of strategic planning things for us in our finance area. And Rick DeVore, who was in our credit area, was the number two person in credit. He's a Detroit man. He wanted to move back to Detroit. And, I think it's good to we didn't change anything while we were going through the conversion, which went very well. But after the conversion, it's good to move people around, get them have different experiences. David's doing extraordinarily well here, and Rick is very excited. He's all gunned up about being the regional president in Detroit, and he's doing very, very well.
He's gotten off to a great, great start.
Oh yes.
Don't ever golf against Boyle, though. Okay.
Oh no, I've heard about him. I heard of him. He's got a kid that can beat him too. He's
yes,
his son.
He's got two. He's got two.
Two. So,
We're talking to Jim Rohr. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
Welcome back to Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Now, here's your host, Jack Krasula.
We're with Jim Rohr, Chairman and CEO of PNC, and they're headquartered in Pittsburgh. And you're currently building the first new skyscraper in downtown Pittsburgh in many years. And you're a very green organization. Talk about being a green organization.
Well, it's been a wonderful thing for us. A number of years ago, Jack, we were building a brand-new operations building here. And the fellow, Gary Salson, who does all of our real estate, came and said, I think we should build this green. And I said, well, why would we want it to be green? I mean, Mellon Bank at the time was green. He said, no, you don't understand. And I didn't. And so I said, okay, how much more will it cost? Something you would ask, Jack, right?
Sure.
And Gary immediately, I'm not sure he told the truth, he said, oh, no, it won't cost any more. So we built a green operations building here called First Side, and it worked out very, very well. It did cost a little more. But, we made the decision then that why not build green? There's no reason not to. And frankly, right now, we actually build buildings less expensively because they're green, from what we've learned, than if they weren't. We've just opened a building here, which is the largest mixed-use gold-green building, gold-certified green building in the world. It's got a Fairmont Hotel and some condominiums and office space in it. And we just opened a new building in Washington, D.C., on the corner of 17th and H, our new headquarters down there, which was received the Platinum Green certification. We're very excited about that, too. And, it's not only a good thing to do, but it's less expensive, and it's better for the people. There's more natural light, and the people love it. So the employees like it, and our customers like the green building idea. So it's good for business as well.
You also own PNC Park in downtown Pittsburgh, which is voted the best baseball park to see a game in. Talk about PNC Park.
Well, it's a wonderful ballpark. Years ago, we were trying to keep the Pirates in town. A fellow named Kevin McClatchy bought the team. And we all worked together to be able to the community to build a new ballpark. And they needed money for the down payment, which had to come from the from the owners who didn't have any money. And so we committed, you know, $30 million over 20 years to put our name on the ballpark. And I have to say, like a lot of things, they made a much better ballpark than we ever could have imagined. Lou Astorino and HOK, who were the two architects, built the ballpark right on the river, and it looks into the city, and it really is a great ballpark. And we're fortunate. I mean, they year in and year out get named as the best ballpark in America.
If the Chicago Cubs came to PNC and wanted a loan and said, "We'll repay it back when we win the World Series," and the Pirates came to PNC and said, "Wanted a loan, pay it back when we win the World Series," who would you lend the money to?
Well, let's see. That's very tough. How much is the loan?
A long-term loan.
I'd say the Cubs have done better than the Pirates, that's for sure.
So, you were in the middle, and you've watched the transformation of Pittsburgh and the whole area. Talk to us here in Detroit about transforming a city and an area.
Well, you're right, Jack. I've been here so long, I guess I have been here through the entire transformation of Pittsburgh, which is still evolving, as all cities do over time. And I think it was interesting for us in the 80s, we lost 250,000 steel-related jobs here. And we were really depressed. We were really depressed. And we had a lot of outflow of population. As a matter of fact, the Steeler Nation across the country, a lot of those people are people who left the region at the time. They lived here during the Steelers of the 70s, and then when the mills went down in the 80s, you know, they had to move away to get for jobs. And so the city was, was very discouraged at the time. But, you know, we've built upon our assets. Carnegie Mellon University, the University of Pittsburgh, the University of Pittsburgh Medical Center, a number of the technology companies here in town, the banks, the foundations that have contributed so much to make sure that the quality of life is good here in Pittsburgh. People just kind of banded together, and it now is a very, very diverse economy with a little over 7% unemployment, you know, way less than the national average, about 7.5, I think, the last time I looked. And then and a year ago, we had the highest employment that we had in the history of the region. It's been a long time coming. It doesn't happen overnight. It's been a 30-year journey for sure. But, it's been named twice the most livable city in the United States in the last 7 years. And it is. It's a wonderful place to live and to work.
As I listen to business people who come to this city, they see the opportunity. Whereas a lot of us who live here, they see the problems. How do we change? Oh, Zig Ziglar used to say we need a checkup from the neck up.
Well, we talk about Pittsburghers the same way. We always say here people don't realize what they have. And I think the same is true. I spoke to the Great Economics Club in Detroit about a year ago. And, Roger Penske, who is a great friend, he introduced me. And we said the same thing. There's no question, obviously, the automobile. Detroit was arguably the most powerful city in the world at one time. Will it be the most powerful city in the world again? I don't know, probably not. If you went back, maybe 30 or 40 years prior to that, maybe Pittsburgh was the most powerful city in the world back in the 20s. I don't know. Will it be that? No. But what should it be? The world has changed, and now we have a global economy. We've got auto companies all over the world, where in the 50s the only place they were was Detroit. So I think what will evolve, Detroit has a work ethic there that people are used to. You've got to build on your educational system. You've got a lot of technology and capabilities in the companies that are around there. Now, will they be the large companies that Chrysler was or is to whatever extent it is there today? No. But you can build on those technologies, those capabilities, leverage things like Detroit University and the University of Michigan and Michigan State. I think the looks like the state government, you know, has got the right mindset. So I think there's a number of things to leverage that'll allow the city to continue to evolve into a better place than it is today. It's still, a little bit in shock from what happened to the auto industry only a few years ago. That takes some time to shake off.
Jim Rohr, in a previous segment, you said that the only constant today is change. Talk to us about being a leader of a bank or any organization through these challenging times and leading a team of people through this change.
Well, it was an Alexis de Tocqueville said, if you don't like change, you're going to like being irrelevant less. So you can't change. You can't stop the change. So you just have to understand. You have to understand where you are in the spectrum. You've got to understand your own strengths and weaknesses, and build on your strengths and shore up your weaknesses. It's all trite stuff, but that's really what it is. But the first thing you start with are the values. You have to start with values that say, and the Midwestern values are the best, where people have integrity, they respect one another, they're honest, hardworking, and if you put a group of people together that have those values and those qualities and aim them in the right direction and get them to work together as a team, you can accomplish a tremendous amount, as long as you're honest with yourself about what your strengths and weaknesses are. I'll tell you, it sounds simple, but the execution of it is a little complex. But if you boil it down to that, you can be very, very successful.
Maybe Yogi Berra said it best when he said, the future ain't what it used to be. And we're talking to Jim Rohr, and I'm Jack Crystal, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
Anything Is Possible with Jack Crysula on News Talk 760 WJR.
We're with the chairman and CEO of PNC Bank, Jim Rohr. And recently, PNC started PNC Grow Up Great, a 10-year, $100 million initiative to improve early childhood education. Jim, $100 million, a lot of money. Why are you doing it?
Well, that's a great question, Jack. PNC has always had a tradition of giving back to the community. It's been a very big part. If my first day here at the bank, not sure whether it was the first piece of paper I was asked to sign or the second one. I know that one was my application to get a job, and the other one was my United Way pledge. And I'm not sure which one they thought was more important, but I signed them both. But giving back to the community is very, very important. And, we believe here at PNC that we serve four constituencies. The shareholder, because if you don't serve them, you don't get to play anymore. The customer, because they pay all the bills. The employees, because they do all the work and take care of the customer. And the community, because that's where we live and work, and that's where our customers and our employees live and grow up and succeed or not. And we actually value ourselves across the board against each of the constituencies. We've been the best performing bank stock in the last 3 and 5 years. We win awards for our customer satisfaction. We were the number one Gallup company each of the last 2 years. We win awards for our products. We won Working Mother Award again. Most of our employees are women. And we've been named the number one company in America for philanthropy by the Council to Encourage Corporate Philanthropy. So all four of those things are important to us. A few years ago, we asked our employees if we focused, what area might they be interested in? They came back and said, children and education. We did a study, and at that time it started to show, because it takes 30 years to do the early education studies, that for every dollar you invested in early childhood education, the society gets somewhere between $16 and $28 back in lower incarceration, welfare, and rehabilitation expense. That's because the average child from an underserved environment shows up with a 25 to 50% deficiency in vocabulary. And from that point forward, the gap between themselves and the average child grows. By the time they get to the fifth grade, they're getting D's and F's because they don't understand the same level of vocabulary the average kid does. And the kid next to them is getting C's, B's, and A's. By the time they're in the fifth grade, they make life decisions because they know that they'll never be a great radio broadcaster. They'll never be a, you know, they'll never be a high school graduate probably. And so they start going down other paths. So we committed, we partnered with Sesame Street and Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. We partnered with PBS Kids and really came out with a board of directors that told us how to really invigorate early childhood education. And we commit dollars locally. Rick DeVore, our regional president, will identify charities, as he has, and David Boyle did, actually, and before him, to where we can contribute money to institutions and organizations that help in early childhood education. And then we pay our employees up to 40 hours a year to volunteer to help.
Of this $100 million grant, you've committed $2.1 million to fund a pre-K school program within the Detroit Public Schools for the next, I think, for seven schools. So thanks a million for doing that, not just for Detroit, but all of America.
Well, David chose the partners for that public school program. The money goes is being invested with the Music Hall Center for the Performing Arts, the Detroit Science Center, and the Detroit Public Schools Foundation. And I think that's working out very well because each of those institutions has identified ways to bring their expertise to early childhood education and give the kids a better experience and a better shot in life. And so that's why we call it Grow Up Great. We don't want to help the kids grow up. They'll do that. We want to help them grow up great. And that's what the Detroit institutions are doing.
Jim Rohr, what are your thoughts and or predictions about the economy in 2011 and 2012?
Well, you know, I think we're slowly coming back out of the recession. We're technically out of the recession now. But I think we're going to, you know, it's going to be a slow slug. I mean, we overbuilt houses and commercial real estate. And if you think about unemployment being, structural unemployment being 5% plus, that's the level you can't go below because people are between jobs or can't work or what have you. Then add to that, you know, a lot of our construction workers in the residential and commercial real estate space, because we're not going to be building a lot of that stuff for the next few years. You know, maybe our recovery unemployment rate might be 7 or 7.5. So we're at 9.5% today. As the economy recovers, they're just not going to get that boost from those two construction industries for 2 or 3 years. And so I think we're coming back. I just think it's going to be slow.
Is America's best days still ahead of it, Jim Rohr?
Oh, it depends on how you define it. I think they are. I really do think they are. I think, you know, as you say, anything is possible. If you want to say, when were we most dominant as an economy? Well, that had to be the 50s and the 60s. After the Second World War, there were no other economies. I mean, you know, we had eliminated most of the other economies. That won't be the case in the future. It's not the case today. There is a global economy that's developing. But I don't think you want to be dominant. I don't think it's necessary. I think you just have to do the best you can. We still have the best school system in the world. We have the best health care system in the world. We have the most innovative people in the world. We have the, you know, by far the largest middle class. We have by far the best standard of living. And you know, I wouldn't mind trade our place in America for any place in the whole world. And I wouldn't trade our future either. So I think the best for America is still yet to come.
You've met tremendously famous people throughout your whole career. Talk to us about one of them, Father Ted Hesburgh of Notre Dame.
Well, you know, I hate to say it, but I remember when Father Ted was made the president of the university. I think he was in his early 30s, back in the 50s. And Notre Dame at that time was a reasonably good college, not a famous center of education. It had, I believe, $7 million in its endowment fund at the time. When I got there in the 60s, we had one place to play basketball, and only 10 guys could play at a time indoors. The rest of the time was outdoors, and we had nothing, and the whole place was air-conditioned. And the dome, which was the administration building, was a classroom building. And I remember my first class, I could see through the floorboards into the building, into the floor below. I could see the light coming through. Not a good situation. I thought maybe there was something the matter with this. The university now has approaching $6.5 billion in its endowment. The buildings have been dramatically upgraded. The educational standards of the university are rather remarkably high, and it has international programs all around the world. And, you know, Father Ted, quite frankly, was the one force over a long, long period of time that was able to pull that off. Now, his partner, Father Joyce, was on campus doing a lot of the on-campus ministry while Father Ted was raising money, and he was the head of the Civil Rights Commission. He was the head of the Atomic Energy Commission. Truly one of the most remarkable men I think I've ever met or heard of. And at 92 years old, I saw him last weekend when I was up there. Fortunately, I've become a trustee of the university, which I just couldn't believe, frankly, when they asked me. But anyway, I saw Father Ted up there at my first meeting, and he said hello and remembered my mother. I mean, he's quite a fella.
And you're quite a fellow. You're the Father Ted Hesburgh of PNC Bank.
Okay. No, I won't accept that one. That's diminishing his praise. I could never be that great man.
Thanks for being with us. Please keep up the great work. God bless.
Thank you, Jack.
Please join us next Sunday. Until then, I'm Jack Krasula. Thanks for listening. And make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spall.